Good afternoon, Kentucky Living Health Club members, and welcome to our weekly interview. Today's interview is with Kate DeBartolo, the National Field Manager for the Conversation Project. And the Conversation Project was co-founded by Pulitzer Prize winner Ellen Goodman and launched in collaboration with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. It's a public engagement campaign with a goal that is both simple and transformative, to have every person's wishes for end-of-life care expressed and respected. Too many people die in a manner that they would not choose, and too many of their loved ones are left feeling bereaved, guilty, and uncertain. The Conversation Project offers people the tools, guidance, and resources they need to begin talking with their loved ones about their wishes and preferences before a medical crisis, at the kitchen table, not in the intensive care unit. Welcome, Kate, to our interview today.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, why don't you start by telling us a little bit more about the conversation, maybe a little bit of the history, and also one of the things I'm interested in are the 7-2-1 dinners. So maybe you can kind of tie all that together for us.
Great. And I think that your little intro that you provided is really helpful context. A lot of people associate this with Ellen Goodman, who founded it. And it was really based on her experiences dealing with the death of her mother and feeling like she really just hadn't had enough conversations to understand what her mother would have wanted in certain scenarios. And upon talking to a lot of her other friends and colleagues, she found that this was a common occurrence and everybody had a story either about a good death or a hard death, and she felt like this was really something that was missing from the national conversation, if you will. So once this got started, there's kind of been two big components that I would see. One of them is the virtual side of things and the resources we have for folks that we've developed on our website. We've had over 100,000 people join us on our website since we started about a year and a half ago. And we have a lot of material. Yeah, it's been really neat to see. And we have, I guess it's impressive to have high download rates. And we have very high download rates. We're told that that's impressive. But, you know, we have materials like a starter kit for how to start having a conversation. We have that in English and Spanish, how to talk to your doctor. We're working on courses for students, medical students, nursing students, so they can get more familiar with this. So we have a lot of great resources available virtually. But we've also been doing a bit more kind of real-life, in-person work around the country as well. So I've been, as the national field manager, I've been working a lot on a regional approach, working with a lot of different communities around the country who are interested in bringing the Conversation Project to their community members. So we meet every month. There's a lot of different types of organizations that are getting involved with that, and it's been really exciting to see. And we have some neat work going on in Kentucky as well. But when you were mentioning with the Hesperus Hospice Group, so they're kind of in Kentucky and Indiana.
But with the that's good to know.
Yes, exactly. And I'll be sure to put you in touch with them, Lisa, after this.
Okay, great. Thank you.
We've been working with a group on what you refer to as the 7-2-1 dinners, and this is another example of bringing this to real life. There's a group that's been working to have folks have conversations about death over dinner. You know, having dinner with their friends or their, you know, their book group or people that they like to talk to, feel comfortable with, and just kind of bringing this, as you said, to the kitchen table or maybe your dining room table. It doesn't have to be very formal. But just starting to talk about this so it's no longer a taboo subject, we've been seeing overwhelming statistics about, you know, 90% of Americans think this is something we should be talking about, and I don't think that 90% of Americans agree about pretty much anything. So we've been working with this group to really focus on the first 7 days of 2014, you know, hitting those New Year's resolutions. And the two organizations are just trying to help people have one conversation. So it's the idea of 7 nights, 2 organizations, 1 conversation. And we have a lot of resources available, again, on our websites that can help people figure out, you know, all right, if I want to have one of these dinners, how would I go about that?
Great. Well, I'll be posting your website as well as probably the directions to download the kits and everything. But go ahead and give us the website right now just so folks can start jotting it down as we go through our talk here.
Okay, great. So that's www.theconversationproject.org. And one of the other things that's really neat on that website is the amount of stories that we've been collecting. So, you know, the Conversation Project was based on Ellen Goodman's story, but we have so many other people who are writing in scenarios that they've been through. And so I would really urge folks to check those out, take a look at them, and maybe send us your own. It really helps build a sense that even through the internet, you know, we're kind of all in this together and that there's people out there experiencing the same thing.
Right. That's really interesting. I love that you can submit your own story. That's really neat. Now, tell us why it's so important to have these conversations about with loved ones. And you had mentioned earlier in our conversation before we got on our recording here that you had just gotten married and you had started to have this conversation with your new husband. So it's not really just for people as they age. It could be for young people as well. Obviously, children having conversations with their parents, but like you just said, spouses having conversations with each other as well. So tell us why it is important to let your loved ones know about this, about your end-of-life wishes.
Well, I think you're exactly right that loved ones could be a variety of types of people. Those could be kids, siblings, parents, spouses, your neighbor, if you feel like your neighbor doesn't have anybody vocal who's nearby and maybe would want somebody looking out for them. And I see it as there being two main reasons to have this, although there's obviously many more. And the first one is for you, and kind of you as the potential future patient should really get a say in this. And if you have preferences about your wishes at the end of life, whatever they are, we have no stake in the game. Whatever they are, we just want to be sure that somebody knows them and that you've shared them and you've kind of gotten that information out to people. That can really be a real relief to somebody, whether or not they're facing an illness or not, to just feel that somebody would know how to represent what their wishes are. And if you don't start having those conversations, you can't then get to the next step. And I think that sometimes people think that they have had the conversation when they say, oh, pull the plug or give me the whole enchilada. It's not particularly helpful, actually. That doesn't give people much guidance. And so I think that's the second thing about why this is important, is also what it means for the person that you're telling, and the person who may have to be the one expressing what your wishes are. And it can really make it not only easier on them and help reduce some of the guilt, but, you know, help answer questions for them so they can say, oh, yes, I know exactly what Lisa would have wanted in this situation, or I feel comfortable making this decision because we talked about it. And it allows this experience that can be death is very sad, and that's kind of inherent in its nature, but it doesn't always have to be bad or hard on people. And when you think about those who survive afterwards and what a gift it can be to help have given them this conversation and a sense of what you would have wanted, it's really doing something for both parties in the conversation.
Right. It really reduces guilt or regret around, did I do the right thing or not, and that type of thing.
Exactly. And allows whoever that person is to be experiencing what's happening and be loving and helpful and caring and not be so distracted with not understanding what you would have wanted.
Wow, great point. Well, why is it so difficult for people to have these conversations? Obviously, people don't like to talk about death, but what have you found through working with the Conversation Project? What are the things people say about why it's so difficult to have this type of conversation?
I think that there's either an aspect of, I don't want to ask my parents because I don't want them to think that they're dying already or that they're that old, or I don't want to burden my children with this. They're so busy with their current work or their life. So there's always trying to kind of ease the burden on somebody else when really everybody just wishes we could talk about this. We often talk about it. It's kind of similar to teenagers and their parents and talking about sex, and everybody kind of doesn't know what the other one's thinking. But it's also that a lot of people feel that it's going to be an extremely medical conversation or legal conversation, and they're not as well prepared. They don't understand all the terminology. And so that's one of the things that we've tried to help alleviate with the materials that we have is helping this be a lot more about values and where you stand on a scale of 1 to 5 on certain questions, and helping people understand why you feel that way as opposed to asking very specific medical questions. There's no way to know what one person's particular experience is going to be at the end of life. And so answering some questions that can be both general and yet specific enough that would help somebody, whether there's an accident that happened tomorrow or there's something that happens in 30 years.
Right. Well, that's a great segue into my last question, actually, which is, what types of things does one talk about during these conversations? Can you give us some examples, maybe, of some of the questions you have that are valued from 1 to 5? What types of questions will people talk about?
Sure. So Yes, I think that the 1-5 scale has been extremely helpful because I know, so my husband and I just did this. We both just got married and we both just turned 30 and we felt like this is a good one to have. And I should pause here to say that Ellen Goodman kind of wished that the name of this could be the Conversations Project, but it didn't sound as cool. But the idea is that you should be having this many times over the course of life. And it was interesting for me trying to get my husband to think of himself now and what if something were to happen in the next few years or weeks and not what's going to happen when you're 80 years old. And so I think trying to kind of keep people in the current, what would be helpful to me now to know, but some of the values, you know, in terms of how long do you want to receive medical care? Is it one, I want to live as long as possible no matter what, to five, quality of life is more important to me than quantity. And you can kind of pick along that scale and help express why that's the case. Why did I pick three or why did I pick five? So you can start to have a conversation about that so people understand. You know, another one of, I'm worried that I won't get enough care, or am I worried that I'll get overly aggressive care? Where do you fall along that spectrum? Because it's so hard to know what one person's particular situation would be, that type of answer could be very helpful to a loved one who's trying to help decide what level of care someone should have.
Right, and then there's a way to have a written record of this when they download the kit and everything to get started. Is there a way to have a like a printout of their answers and that type of thing?
Yeah, you can print it out. You can write on it by hand or write it on the computer. It's a great thing to just kind of have on file. You know, while it's not a legally binding document, we've heard of people who sign their name at the end of it and say, like, yep, this was me. And there's obviously additional steps you can take further down the line if you want the legally binding or medically binding documents, and we have information about that. But it's hard to start to do those unless you've had the conversation and can help explain what your answers are. And I think that one of the things that the Conversation Project and these materials really focuses on is what matters most to you, not what's the matter with you, but what matters most to you. And you know, when somebody says, as long as I'm having meaningful communication with my grandchildren, what is meaningful communication? You know, how can you get deeper into that with somebody? And again, as I mentioned, just having this conversation many times in life, I think that helping this be the norm and that people talk about this not only with their loved ones, but they can express it with others, I'm definitely seeing more of that in the field, and it feels like the momentum's headed in that way.
Especially, I think with the baby boomer generation, I think they have a different outlook maybe on death and end of life wishes than maybe the generation before or before that. I think they're a little more open to talk about these kind of uncomfortable subjects.
Absolutely. And
well,
they have kind of the same generation of helping with their parents as well as then wanting to share with their children. So it's a great bridge group.
Yes, yes. I'm really excited about it, and I really hope that our members will be as excited as I am. So I'm hoping to launch our own kind of 7-2-1 dinner or conversation project with the members of the Kentucky Living Health Club. So once again, Kate, I thank you so much for being here with us today and sharing all this great information and letting us know more about the Conversation Project.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you, Kentucky Living Health Club members. I'll see you on our next interview. Bye-bye.